Get the opportunity to do that today. You ever stop to think about this question right here? How did I get here? How did I get here? Now, for some of you, you think, well, Brent, that's pretty simple. I woke up, I got dressed, I got in my car, pulled out of my driveway. Eventually, I turned onto Ashworth Road into a parking lot, and hey, here I am. Not that. Well, we all know how we got here that way, right? I'm thinking more existentially, but not necessarily, don't go too far the other extreme, you know, like, well, you know, several billion years ago, God spoke, bang, the world came into existence, you know, whatever. I'm not talking about atoms crashing together. But think about your life, just right now. Think about your life, your job, your important relationships, where you live, how you got here, how you got where you are, how you got maybe even to this church today. Think about that. Now, when you think about that, anybody like me where you have moments where you go, how in the world did I get here? Is that just me? Let me see those hands if you think that sometimes. Okay, not just me. I think that often. I have several moments like this in my life where I'm like, whose life am I living? I mean, it's like, how did I land here at this time? Like, I remember in 2022, I had the opportunity to travel to Israel. I got to share that experience with many of you. But I remember one morning I was feeling the full effects of jet lag, 24 hours of travel, an 8-hour time difference, and I woke up about 3 a.m., and I walked outside. We were staying in these small bungalows there, and I went outside, and I just got to sit on the edge of the Sea of Galilee. And that's the picture I took that morning. This was end of October, early November. Way across there, the light's kind of in the middle. That's the city of Tiberias that's mentioned in Scripture. What you see more closer, those lights, that's kind of the resort area that we were staying in. They had these small bungalows. But as I sat out there at 3 in the morning, wide awake, and I took that picture and eventually saw the sunrise, I had this moment and I said, whose life is this? Whose life is this? Whose life am I getting to live? How did I get here? And yeah, sure, I can think about the logistics of air travel, you know, and hotel accommodations, but it's bigger than that, isn't it? Sometimes we need to stop and think about the bigger picture of how did I get here? What led me here? The interesting thing about life is that in some ways, we have so little control, don't we? I mean, in some ways, we just kind of have to take the curveballs that life throws us and the punches that life throws in our face, don't we? Sometimes we just don't get that decision. It just comes at us. Or sometimes we don't fully think about maybe the decisions that we're making, and we don't think about the ripple effect that, you know, I sit here as your pastor, and I've been here for 17 and a half years, and really, all of it started with a decision in 2000. No, yeah. Jaden, when were you born? 2003. There we go. In 2003, where for some unknown reason, Carrie's pregnant with our third child. I have a great job moving up in an organization, and we feel God's call to move 3.5 hours away because some people we know said, hey, we have a church that needs some help. And we're like, why not? We lived in an RV for 2 months. When we get there, within about 8 weeks, the church collapses and closes down. And we're left there going, And then one Sunday in our search for a church, I walk into this place where I meet a pastor who, little did I know, 2 years later, he would be the pastor of Ashworth Church. 2 years after that, he'd call me to be on staff here. And 17 years later, as they say, the rest is history. Do you think I could have possibly anticipated that is where? No, we all see those ripple effects. But in some ways, we do have control because I did make the decision to quit my job. I made the decision to move. We all have some choices in how we respond to what life throws at us. We always have that ability. And we can make some decisions along the way to help change the trajectory of our lives. I mean, if you don't like your job, let me introduce you to Indeed or ZipRecruiter. You know, or LinkedIn has jobs, or Glassdoor, or whatever. There's tons of them out there, right? If you don't like what the doctor says to you about your cholesterol or certain things, you can make some decisions, right? You can go in and you can say, okay, I'm going to change my healthy, I'm going to become healthier, I'm going to work out, I'm going to exercise, I'm going to eat better. You can do those things. Or when we have tragedy or we get to the big questions of life, we have choices. We can choose to kind of see faith as something to lean into, or we can allow those things to push us away. But hopefully we see as Jesus as a way of getting through it. For the past 6 weeks, we've been exploring several topics kind of along this idea of our lives, how we're living, and it really kind of has a lot to do with where we're at now. Because we're talking about our emotional and our mental health, and we would all, I think, agree that, man, that definitely has an impact on where we land, where we are today. We may even look at our relationships and how those things impact our spiritual health, because, man, that has a huge impact on us, doesn't it? And we've talked about how we're called to cross the line into, you know, a lot of different areas. And today we're going to conclude the series, and we're going to talk about a couple of lines that we need to make sure, or at least one line that we need to make sure that we've already crossed, and another line that we need to be looking towards. And we're going to start about the starting line and the finish line today. The book of Hebrews in the New Testament gives us some great insight here. Interesting book. I love it. It has a lot of Jewish history, theology in it, and we don't know who wrote it. That's one of the challenging things, is we don't have a clue who wrote this, but man, it's so good, talking about Old Testament sacrifices and who Jesus is. And then you get to Hebrews chapter 12, and look at what's written here. It says, "Therefore, since such a great cloud of witnesses surrounds us, let us throw off everything that hinders and the sin that so easily entangles, and let us run with perseverance the race marked out for us, fixing our eyes on Jesus, the pioneer and perfecter of faith. For the joy set before him, he endured the cross, scorning its shame, and sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. Consider him who endured such opposition from sinners, so that you will not grow weary and lose heart." Now, I struggle with passages like this only because I hate running. Even this morning, can I get an amen? Matthew Becker, be quiet. Lance Peterson, be quiet. Even this morning, I walk in this room, Lance Peterson coaches cross country for Dowling, and they have state qualifying this week, and he's telling me about this, and he's telling me about, he loves to cycle now, but he used to love, I don't understand Lance at all. Sorry, Lance. I mean, that whole running thing. I've said before, I don't get it. Unless a bear is chasing you, why run? You know, I don't get it. But I do know that several of, who are my runners in the room? Go ahead, that row right there. Anna, go ahead, you're a runner. Come on, it's okay. Matthew Becker, are you a runner, Keegan? Let me see those hands, lift them high. Oh, look, man, a lot more of you than I thought. Congratulations for you. Good job out of you. Man, so I'm gonna take all this back. Running is amazing, it's awesome. No, I mean, even this past week, I don't know if you guys saw this, but our very own Balia Pacabear, she ran the Chicago Marathon. Last weekend, she set her personal record while doing it, which is amazing. I mean, isn't that awesome? I applaud runners. I'm just not one of you. I wish I was. I tried it. I didn't like it. I just thought there's got to be other things. But here's the interesting thing I do know about running. Before you approach a marathon, before you approach any race, the training begins way ahead. You can't just wake up the morning of a marathon and say, you know what? I think I'm going to run a marathon today, right? I mean, you got to think about this. It begins months before race day. In fact, one website I was reading this week said, for marathon training, you need to start 12 to 20 weeks before the race. Is that accurate, Matthew? About right? See, I know you've trained before. You know, and not only that, you got to pick the right shoes. Because if you're going to do 26 miles, you can't just go get some Walmart specials and think that's going to be okay. You're going to be hurting at the end. So you got to get the good shoes. And really, you need the right running gear, because you got to have something that kind of breathes and kind of deals with sweat and keeps you cool when it's, you know, hot, and keeps you warm when it's cool, kind of thing. And then every day, almost every day, if not every day, you need to be outside. You need to be running. In fact, one website I read said you need to probably run to prepare for a marathon between 15 and 30 miles a week. I'm good driving 15 to 30 miles a week. Running, it's a whole different story. And in your training, though, what's interesting is you can actually do things to help you prepare. You might wear heavier things, heavier clothing, you know, to help build strength. You might watch what you eat to make sure you're getting enough protein and carbs. But on race day, what do? None of that's there, right? You are slimmed down, you are sleek, you are trim, and you are ready to go, because nothing extra that might weigh you down is going to be with you on that starting line. What's interesting is that The writer of Hebrews here uses this exact analogy to talk about what it's like to follow Jesus. You know, there is a starting point where many of us have kind of had that moment where it's like, I'm going to follow Jesus. The problem is that you usually don't take weeks or months of preparation to get there. Usually it's like, I'm ready to go, let's go, and you're kind of thrown into the race. And a lot of times it can feel like you're trying to figure things out as you go along. And what happens with us in this race of faith, where in a marathon, you've shed everything that's going to weigh you down. You've just got the basics. I mean, the heaviest thing you probably have on you on race day is probably what? An iPhone with AirPods, right? I mean, just to give you something to listen to while you run. But in the race of faith, what you find is that many times as you've begun to run, you find some weights that have begun to weigh you down. And really, that's been the point of this series, to hopefully maybe show us, and it's not always comfortable to realize, but hopefully we can lean in and begin to see, okay, there's some things in my life that I need to address, some things that I need to bring to the surface, some things I need to talk to Jesus about, because I'm beginning to see that they're weighing me down. They're keeping me from being fully able to run the race. And hopefully we were giving you the encouragement and the tools to throw off what they were called hindrances. I mean, look at what we considered over the last several weeks. We talked about knowing ourselves and being honest with the person we are within. That it doesn't do us any good to kind of put the blinders on and go, no, that's not me. We have to understand who we truly are. And we can't be afraid of that. Our understanding of God plays a huge role in this. He loves us and He wants us to be the best human we can be, the one He's created us to be. And the way that happens is by allowing some of this stuff out and allowing Him to kind of begin to deal with it. In fact, if you remember that first couple of weeks we talked about, we had this quote from Augustine where he said, "How can you draw close to God when you're far from your own self?" And he prayed, "Grant, Lord, that I may know myself, that I may know Thee." There's a conjoining of knowing God and knowing ourselves. We talked about that importance. It's not comfortable, is it? Sometimes you ever, like me, you just get to a place and you think, "Dear God, can we just get over this already? I'm ready to be done. I'm ready to be complete. But I'm not there yet." Anybody else feel that way? Yeah, okay. But after that, we talked about the need for community. We talked about just the power of having others around us to encourage us, to challenge us occasionally, but having that support system in place that helps us keep moving forward. Because if we don't have that, what do we find? We will get discouraged. We'll get down. We'll fall away. We'll move away because we're just like, "Oh, I can't do this on my own." And we also discussed that when you have community, sometimes fun happens and we have stuff called conflict. And our real desire is to like run away from it or act like it doesn't exist, but really the best thing we can do is kind of lean into it and begin to reconcile the conflict in our lives. And then we talked last week just about how it's important not just to live for ourselves, but to look around us, to look outside this building and realize that other people, the things that we're struggling with, the things that we're dealing with, they are too. This isn't isolated. We're not special in that way where it's like, "Well, I have some emotional things I'm going through." Yep, you and the rest of the world. The difference is, as we work through these things, we're finding how faith can help us deal with these things and draw closer to Jesus. And we have opportunities for those that are spiritually seeking to speak into those relationships and help. And we have something really cool that we can bring to the conversation. And we should lean into those conversations with people that are spiritually seeking. Hopefully, we see those are some of the things we're dealing with. And the writer of Hebrews in the passage we read mentions that as we run this race, we need to be willing to kind of cast off, to get rid of the hindrances, the things that might be weighing us down, the coats that we might be wearing, the baggage that we might be holding on to. We need to get rid of those things. And then the writer says something else that we really wish they wouldn't talk about because we don't like that word, but it's the sin word. And they talked about the sin that so easily entangles. Anybody ever experienced that? Anybody ever find yourself just, you know, I think the easiest example for me is I'm driving down the street and somebody does something stupid. And just be, you know, everybody else that drives is stupid. I'm not, but they are. And in that moment, I watch what happens within me, and I have to have that self-regulating moment where I'm like, well, why was I thinking such terrible thoughts about that person? Why was I thinking terrible things about their mother? Why was that, you know, things like that, you know? Just me? I'm not the only one, right? I have to start processing that, and I realize that, man, like walking through my living room at night, if I'm not careful, my kid's going to leave an extension cord pulled across the living room, and I'm going to tangle myself. Colin's laughing because he's seen my living room. I'm going to get my ankle wrapped around that cord, and I'm going to fall flat on my face. I wasn't looking for it. I didn't expect it, but there it was. We see that there's this sin that so easily entangles us. And what's fascinating here in this passage is that the writer doesn't give us a list of sins here to be on the lookout for. That'd be easy, wouldn't it? Like, here's the top five. Here's the big ones. Here's the ones you need to pay attention to. Don't do these five. That would make it so much easier. But that's not what we get. That's not what the answer is. The writer here doesn't seem to say, watch out for specific sins, but rather to remind us that any sin can be a hindrance to us in this faith, in this race of faith. Anything has the potential to trip us up, to cause us to fall on our faces. And any of those things we need to be aware of, and we need to be willing to throw them out, throw them off, because they will weigh us down. What's interesting is that word translated entangles, the sin that so easily entangles. Do you know what it could also be translated as? The sin that so easily distracts. I don't like that. I understand how easily distracted I am. And the word distraction, it just hits way too close to home for me. Because I have a lot of distractions. And not only do I have a lot of distractions, I deceive myself in telling myself, it's okay, Brent, you have a lot of control over those distractions. Until that next batch of episodes drops on that show that I really like to watch. And then I realize that I have very little control. And I can very quickly get derailed. And I can find myself being kept from the things that really matter. And I'm not saying watching a show is sinful or whatever, but I think in my life it shows me that what I think I have control over, whether it be sin, whether it be distraction, it's not as easy as I think. Distractions have a lot more power over me. And I understand why they entangle me. Because it becomes one more episode, one more drink, one more whatever, one more book, one more. I mean, anything can be a distraction, one more ball game. And I realize just how powerless sometimes I am to control those things. You know, if we were watching a race, if we were the Olympics, who watched the Olympics this past summer? How many of you like the track and field? Like track? Okay, there we go. Track and field's fun, but if we were watching the Olympics this summer and we saw a runner approach the 100 meters and they were wearing a nice, big, heavy parka and they get ready to race and he gets down on the blocks and he's still got the parka on, what are we thinking? Thanks, Lynn. Lynn is just going to throw it out there. Idiot. Exactly. How many of us are thinking this is going to be the winner? No, we're not. Or if we saw somebody get up to the starting blocks with, you know, three suitcases. And they're going to, I mean, we would look at that and go, what's wrong with you? You can't run that race that way. And yet, typically, that's what we find with us, isn't it? Sometimes we are weighed down. Sometimes we carry the weight. Sometimes we have a little bit of baggage. And because we haven't been willing to deal with the emotional and the relational and the mental health and all those things, we find ourselves in the race trying to run as fast as we can, carrying suitcases under all the arms. And we're exhausted. And we think to ourselves, I thought following Jesus was supposed to be easier than this. And I think Jesus is looking at us just going, set the suitcases down. And yet some of us are still trying to run that race. weighed down with the parka, weighed down with the things that hinder, weighed down with broken relationships, with mental health, with emotional health, things that we haven't resolved. And we wonder why this is harder than it should be. As I was thinking about this, I thought, maybe we need a moment just right now to think, what is it that could be hindering us? What is it that could be hindering you as you think about the race that you are running? What baggage might you be carrying that might need to be thrown off or laid down this week? And this could be with you and God. And this could be with, you know, you and the community that you have. As you deal with these things, this could be with you and a professional, a therapist, a pastor, a spiritual director, whatever. What are the hindrances that you think about in your life right now? Think back through the past 6 weeks. Are there things that kind of popped up on a Sunday that, praise God, these messages are only like 30 to 35 minutes because then we get to sing a song and then I get to walk out of here and forget it until the pastor brings it back to my attention? What's the baggage? What's the weight? What's the hindrances? And then maybe also, if something comes to mind, is there something you need to do this week? Is there a phone call, an email, a text to a friend, to a pastor, to a therapist, to your community, to someone? Maybe it's just, I need a daily rhythm. I need to deal, me and God need to deal with this right now. What is it? What can you do this week to begin taking those steps to set the bags down, to take the coat off, and to find a little release, a little freedom in the race that we're trying to run? Take just 30 seconds to think about that. Anybody else get concerned about how unnerving silence can be? Come on, keep talking. Please keep talking. Anybody else feel that? I'm sure that wasn't even 30 seconds because all of us were in that moment of just, it's so uncomfortable. Please say something, anything. Don't let these questions leave you this week. But let's talk a little bit more. You know, in a marathon, what I find fascinating, and the marathon runners may contradict this, but the starting line isn't as important in a marathon as it is in a sprint. Why would I say that? I looked up the results. This past summer in the Paris Olympics, in the 100-meter race, there was actually a tie for first and second, and third place was a whopping 0.02 of a second behind them. How important is getting off the starting blocks? Very important. Last week in the Chicago Marathon, there was almost a 2-minute difference between first and second place. How they started probably didn't factor in as critically as the sprint. What really was mattered more than anything was what? Setting a good pace, right? That's critical. How fast am I trying to run? You know, in our fast-paced world, when we think of a race, how many of us think of a marathon? If you're a marathon runner, you probably do. But most of us think, no, quick, fast, get it done. Get in there, go quick as possible. Faster and faster. And how often in our lives do we run that way? Do we operate that way? We want everything quick. Time is money. Let's go. Let's do it. Let's get it done. In fact, some of you may be sitting here today and my slower pace of talk, you're like, come on, Brent, let's go. Let's go. Let's go. Speed it up. Let's go. But the race we're talking about here in Hebrews is not a sprint. It is a marathon. It's a long race. And this is going to take a while. And as I think about the race, I love this expression. We overestimate what we can accomplish in a day, and we underestimate what we can accomplish in a lifetime. Don't we? I love that phrase. I think there's such truth there. I think there's power there. We overestimate what we can accomplish in a day. I know I do. But we underestimate what we can accomplish in a lifetime. And the writer of Hebrews here is encouraging us to run, but to run at a good pace. Why? Because this is a long race, and the goal is to get to the end. And the way that happens is with perseverance. We have to run with perseverance. What does that even mean? What does that even look like? We're being told that as we run this race, we need to cast off things, we need to be transformed along the way, we need to change along the way. And what this means, though, is that perseverance is going to require growth. Perseverance is not just we forget everything and run. Things are going to happen. There's going to be obstacles in the way. We're going to find out, oh my goodness, there's another layer that I need to peel off. Perseverance is going to require the ability to lean into these things when they happen and go, okay, I'm going to deal with that now. And as we run and as we see more and more of our hindrances, as we experience more and more difficulty along the path, we have to figure out, how am I going to respond? How am I going to react in this moment? Will I allow this thing, will this be the thing that takes me out? Will this be the thing that makes me veer off course? Will this be the thing that just blows my mind and has me just sit down on the track and cross my arms and legs and ball up and cry? Or will this cause me to lean in harder and keep going? And this is why coming here on Sunday, and I love you guys, and I'm glad you're here, but this can't be the end all of our spiritual growth and development. Listening to messages in this series and for us to encourage you weekly to kind of deal with these things, it's not enough. When you are confronted with the things within yourself, what do you do with that? Are you going to turn a blind eye? Are you going to kind of deal with it? When you realize you have conflict or that someone is opening up to you about something personal or spiritual, how will you respond? You see, I think one of the greatest lies the church ever told was Sunday's it. And also on top of that, pray this prayer and everything's good after that. It ain't. It's not. It's much bigger than that. It's not pray a magical prayer and everything is good. You realize that Jesus never asked somebody to pray a prayer. Well, pray a prayer and ask me into your heart. John 3:22. No, it's not there. In fact, what's interesting is the only picture we have of prayer with Jesus is when his disciples said, hey, you go pray a lot. Why don't you teach us how to pray? And he goes, okay, I'll teach you how to pray. But what he did do was he made statements like this. Hey, come follow me. He said things like this. Take up your cross. He said things like this. Love one another. He said, you are my friends if you do what I command. As we run, our goal is to be moving toward a spiritual health, a spiritual vibrancy, wholeness. Unfortunately for us, though, that path to spiritual vibrancy doesn't run through self-centered living. It doesn't run through ignoring how our lives impact those around us or ignoring our own souls. The path we run to spiritual vibrancy runs through the cross, an instrument of torture and death. You see, running this race and crossing these lines will require us to grow up. We don't get to just stay where we were. There's got to be some growth. There's got to be some development. I've used this analogy before. If I have my children and they're infants and I look at them and they never start crawling and they never start walking and they never say words like mama and dada and hungry and feed me and then grow up and continue to develop, or my kids get to the teenage years and they stay teenagers forever, God forbid, you know. If that happened, what would we do? We'd be knocking on the door, doctor, something's wrong. And yet we come to church and we don't see that same motivation, that same push, that same desire to say, am I growing? Am I experiencing God differently today than I was 5 years ago, 1 year ago? And see, growth is not missed in the New Testament. I mean, the Apostle Peter in 1 Peter writes this. He says, like newborn babies, crave spiritual milk so that by it you may, what? Grow up in your salvation now that you've tasted the Lord is good. In Hebrews, just a little bit earlier, we see this. It says, in fact, though by this time you ought to be teachers, you need somebody to teach you the elementary truths of God's word over again. You need milk, not solid food. Anyone who lives on milk, still being an infant, is not acquainted with the teaching about righteousness, but solid food is required for the mature, who by constant use have trained themselves to distinguish good from evil. Therefore, let us move beyond the elementary teachings about Christ and be taken forward to what? Maturity. In Ephesians, Paul writes this, so Christ gave us the apostles, prophets, evangelists, pastors, teachers, to equip his people for works of service so that the body of Christ may be built up until we all reach unity in faith and in the knowledge of the Son of God and become mature, attaining to the whole measure of the fullness of Christ. How do we do this? What do? We lean into the awkward. We embrace the uncomfortable. We allow the work of the Holy Spirit to work in us, to start revealing things that we can face and deal with them and move on down the path that we are running. Just this past week in our Practicing the Way course, the session was on meeting God in pain and suffering. It sounds exciting, right? It was amazing, actually. Let me tell you, it was an impactful class. Before leaving, they're given a practice to attempt during the week. And this was the practice this week. It said, notice and name your emotions. Well, that sounds fun, doesn't it? But listen to the instructions. It said, the journey into emotional health involves learning to notice and name our emotions in the presence of God. When we notice and name our feelings, they have less power over us. If you were to name a painful emotion like fear, anger, disappointment, or jealousy, a brain scan would show that your very act of naming it helps to process and quiet that emotion. Wow. Things we often don't hear about in church, huh? But maybe things we, as followers of Jesus, need to do. Are there things you're not doing because you're afraid they'll be uncomfortable? Are there practices you think you might need to implement in your spiritual growth in order to help you run this race with perseverance? Again, I hope what we say on Sundays inspires you. I hope it motivates you. But if that's all that it does, we have failed. I can't just inspire you. I can't just hopefully motivate you. I need you to pick up what we say on Sundays and take that out into the world during the week and say, you know what? I do need a daily prayer rhythm. Not legalistically, but because God, Jesus is inviting me to get to know him. So tomorrow, before I go to work, I'm going to stop for 5 minutes and I'm going to have a moment of just prayer with Jesus, silence and solitude. I'm going to do that for 5 minutes. Let's see what happens. Let's try it. Pick that up. See, are there things we need to do to help us grow to maturity so that we can run this race? As we wrap up the series, I close with just a couple of reminders that we see in this Hebrews passage. First, it's this. Distractions will happen, and that's okay, but there's something that can help us when we get distracted. What is that? Jesus. What did the writer of Hebrews say? He says, fix our eyes on Jesus. Why do we do that? Because he's run the race before us. He's done it. He's blazed the trail. We're following in his steps. We're following in his steps. Back to my Israel trip, I got to walk on streets that were 2,000 years old, and our guide said these streets were likely here when Jesus was here. I put my feet in the place where Jesus actually stepped. That's cool, isn't it? The streets that he walked on. But you know what? You don't have to go to Israel to do that. You get to do that every day. He's gone before you. He knows what you're dealing with. He's had to deal with something similar. I mean, look at how it's described. It says, for the joy set before him, he endured the cross, scorning its shame, and sat down at the right hand of God. He knew what was coming in his life. He had difficulty. He had trouble. You will too. He's been there. He knows what it's like to want to give up. Anybody ever felt like giving up? You ever read Jesus' prayer in the Garden of Gethsemane? Jesus says, God, if it take this cup from me, but not my will. That's a prayer of saying, hey, if we can get out of this, I'm good with it. And not only that, look at how he's described as interacting with us. That passage said he's the pioneer of our faith, the author, the originator, the perfecter, the completer. What's happened in you is a direct result of the work of Jesus in your life, and he's not done yet. Do you know that? He's not done yet. He will help you see this to the end. And probably one of the weirdest and yet greatest parts of this is what was said at the beginning. Therefore, since we are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses. Let me tell you what, these aren't spectators sitting in the stands. These are people standing at the finish line. Go back and look at Hebrews chapter 11, the chapter of faith, where it's this person had faith, and this person had faith, and this person had faith. These witnesses are encouragement to us. They're not cheering us on. We're looking to them to say, how can I do this? How can I get to the end? And it's a reminder, they've done it before. You can do this too. It's what we see in them, not what they see in us that's being communicated here. We see them as our examples. We're not blazing a new trail. We're just following them. And so my last words to you this morning is it's time to run. It's time to run. Where are you? What led you here? To this place, to this moment of faith? It's time to run. Some of us may be still sitting on the starting line. Some of us may have swerved off course. Some of us may have become distracted. Some of us may have been tripped up or haven't shed the weight yet. It's time to run. It's time to step forward. It's time to do the things that need to be done. It's time to lean into the relationship that Jesus is calling to. It's time to know ourselves. It's time to be reconcilers, and it's time to run. We have a course to complete. Why? Because there's one more line that sits before us, and that is the finish line. And we're looking forward, and we have hope, and we know what is to come because we're following Jesus all the way, allowing the change and the transformation to happen to us as we do, knowing that one day we will cross that finish line and we will see Jesus face to face. Yes. Are you ready to run? Let's run. Let's pray. Father, thank you for an encouragement to just get off our rear ends and jump into this race, this path that you've led before us, laid out before us. And is it scary? You better believe it. Is it hard work? Absolutely. As any runner in this room can tell us, it's not easy. But as Lance told me this morning, he reminded me, he said, it's not about the race for me. It's about what I feel at the end, how good my body feels, that sense of accomplishment. It may be difficult and it may be challenging, but along the way, we're going to feel that encouragement from you, Jesus. We're going to know that we're running in your steps. And as we see the change happening within us, as we see that we're becoming more like Jesus, it's going to be amazing. And we can have that sense of accomplishment. We can have that sense of even pride in the work that you've done in and through us. So God, help us to run. Get off the starting line. See where we've swerved off course. See where we've been tripped up. And let's get up and let's run this race that's been set out before us with perseverance for the sake of Jesus.